Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome to another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm Colin Stewart, your co-host. I'm joined today by Mike Brower. Now, Mike, you're the VP of Sales over at Full Contact, right?
Yep.
And we met about a month and a half ago, and your CEO, Bart, was sort of introduced you to me as the fortune teller, the oracle, which is something as a CEO I can totally appreciate. As somebody who's been in sales and been in sales management, I've never quite ever earned the title of oracle. I've been accused of the opposite many times. So it was really it was great getting to a chance to sort of understand your methodology and how you do things. And the fact that you've been so accurate in forecasting your sales and future revenue is why we wanted to get you on the show today. So thanks for joining us. And so today we're going to talk about your sort of secret methodology not so secret anymore, for forecasting sales.
Yeah, you bet. And I'll just say that, although I take it as a compliment and Bart introduces me, the CEO, whether it's to investors or just to the tech community as this fortune teller of sorts, it really started from being completely embarrassed, in not being able to do so. And I can tell a story around that, but at some point in time, I realized I better figure this out or I better find another profession. So, and I happen to be a pretty simple individual, so I broke it down into some pretty simple steps.
Yeah, I'm sure I can relate, but I'd love to hear the story. It sounds like there's a good one there on being embarrassed a little bit.
Yeah, and embarrassed quite a bit. So I was at a company maybe 10 years ago or so, and it was a growth stage company. It was going from $2 million in revenue when I started, and it was scaled up to $56 million run rate or something like that, and managing cash, and we had a lot of employees and a lot of services. Managing cash was critical to the business, and so the CFO it came to me, and it was the beginning of the first quarter of this new year, and he said, "Hey, really need to manage cash, and really need to understand what the sales team's going to do this quarter," and so. In order to predict that or understand that, can you give me the forecast for Q1? So I said, absolutely. And I dug into the sales pipeline and went into the CRM and looked at each stage that the pipeline was at and how many dollars we had in each stage. And I assigned a percentage. So if it was in an early stage a scenario, I put a 20% probability on it, and all the way up to the contract sent stage, and put an 80% or 90% probability on it, and said, great, we have $100,000 in contract sent, so I'm going to put $90,000 of that in our forecast, and so on. So I went to him and said, hey, we're going to do $310,000 this quarter. He said, that's fantastic. That's going to beat the budget, and that's great to know. Well, at the end of Q1, we did something like $170,000. And so he comes to me the next quarter and he said, boy, last quarter seemed like a real miss. But looking at the pipeline, what do you think you're going to do this quarter? And I said, well, I'll get back to you, and did the same exact exercise. And boy, our pipeline had grown a little bit, right? So we had some things pushed from Q1 to Q2. And I was really excited. And I went back to him and said, well, this quarter we're going to do $450,000 in revenue. Oh, that's great, Mike. Thanks. That's really going to help me plug those numbers in. At the end of the quarter, we did, it was something like $210,000. So quite a big miss. We get to the beginning of Q3. He didn't come ask me. And so we were 2 weeks into the quarter. And I went up to the CFO's office and I said, hey, we haven't talked about the forecast. We're already a couple weeks into the quarter. I've actually put it together for you, so I'd love to sit down and go over it. And he said, nah, don't worry about it. I've actually dug into the pipeline, and I've come up with my own way to predict it, so don't worry about it, but good luck this quarter. And what I realized in the moment is I obviously had no credibility with the CFO, and the CFO was forecasting the revenue up to our investors, to the board, the executive team, and I lost complete and total credibility to be able to commit to the organization what revenue we are going to do in the upcoming quarter. And I was absolutely embarrassed. And in that moment, I realized I need to fix that. Something needs to change. And that's what started me on the journey of iterations and trying to figure out how to do it better.
I think I've sat in on, or maybe been in that situation a couple of times myself. So I can totally appreciate. Now, just compare with, you know, what you guys are doing at Full Contact today. Do you want to share a little story about the, you know, how the board sees your forecasts now, so we can figure out like why should the listeners stick around and hear what you have to say over the rest of the episode here?
Yeah, you bet. It's interesting timing because we just had a board meeting yesterday and our board dinner last night. And since I've been here after the first quarter, so the first full quarter I was here, I made it very clear to the CEO and to the board that it's going to take me a quarter to understand the sales process here, understand the steps, understand what criteria matters in each step. And by the second full quarter, I'll feel good to put a forecasting methodology in place. And so studied the pipeline, studied the velocity, really understand, tried to understand the buying process. So now we're, call it 7 full quarters into implementing the forecasting methodology. I've been off on what I say we're going to do for a quarter by as much as 8%, and it was 8% over what I forecasted, which was just luck that we had a couple of things go our way that were not in the forecast. I have been off on the downside of the forecast by 3%, and everything else has fallen in between. So when I sat down at the board meeting, which they've made part of the regular meeting cadence now, which is that I have to give the current quarter's forecast. And there was even comments, they laughed that, is it going to be within 1% this time? When are you going to hit it just dead on? And, but it's a good feeling. Now, sometimes that means what you're telling your investors and telling your CEO is that we're not going to hit the budget. It's about setting the right expectation or the realistic expectation. So sometimes the news is bad news, but you're giving that bad news early, and then there's things that the organization can do to mitigate the impact of it. Thank goodness, knock on wood, most of the time it's good news you're delivering, and just the credibility that you get from that and predictability, and it's a good place to be.
Awesome. Grounded in reality.
Grounded, that's exactly it. Yeah. Good or bad news, it's grounded in reality.
Right on. So you've actually, because the conversation we're going to have, there's quite a few moving parts, and you've actually put together some slides, which I'm really looking forward to. For people that are listening, just the audio only version, we're going to post a link to those slides in the show notes, so you can grab those now and follow along. It's just a Google slide deck. For those that are watching, Mike's going to show a screen and sort of walk us through how he works his magic.
Yeah, you bet. And I can't preface enough that I have very much, the reasons why I became very attracted to sales leadership 20 years ago or so was for two reasons. One was simply that you can invest time with the sales rep, really invest time in coaching and helping them out, and then see the incremental results and get the gratification that you've really helped them achieve their goals. The second was that the numbers to me in sales are really simple and straightforward, and the numbers don't lie. So because I'm simple, I've hopefully broken this down in that way for the audience as well. But these first few slides, I just reiterate the story that I just shared with you. But the first step I had to look at is, why did it fail? Why did I dig into the pipeline? And by the way, invest a good couple of hours looking at each opportunity, looking at what stage it was at, and so on. And why was my forecast so incredibly off? So this may look familiar, and for those listening to the audio, the type of sales stage and forecasting values that I had back then also seem to be very common when I'm doing mentoring and coaching in the community, which is the sales stages are something like discovery call scheduled, discovery call completed, demo scheduled, demo completed, proposal sent, and so on. And then with each of those sales stages, there tends to be a percentage or value to what type of dollars you would forecast when opportunities are in that stage. So you may say 10% forecast for companies that or opportunities that are in the discovery call scheduled phase. You may say 80% forecast value to companies or opportunities that are in the contract sent stage. And so, and Colin, in your experience as well, does this seem like a pretty standard kind of pipeline and forecast methodology that you've seen?
Yep. Oh, for sure. I mean, you're looking at the pieces that it's based out of the activity that me as a salesperson is sort of completing, and you're trying to take a guess. Oh, you know, 1 in 10 of my discovery calls that I complete, or 1 in 5 sort of, you know, turn into a close sale, which is, you know, that number itself might be right, but is not really, again, grounded in reality if you're going to try and build a forecast on it.
Well, that's absolutely right. And the challenge there, and I'll get into a couple other reasons here why I believe this failed in my situation over the years. But if you think about it, and we're going to say, okay, 20% or 1 in 5, once you've completed a discovery call, 1 in 5 of those become closed sales. Well, as we know, not all opportunities are created equal. So you may have a $60,000 opportunity that's at discovery call completed, and you may have 4 $500 opportunities that are at discovery call completed. Well, if that $60,000 opportunity doesn't close, you're not going to get 20% of the revenue that you have in that stage. So it really does not contemplate the size of deals at each stage. And I think that was one of the fatal flaws. Some of the other ones that I believe why this methodology failed for my situation is that it's really based on sales activity. What it's not aligned to is how people buy things. So in order for this to work, you have to be so incredibly confident that your sales reps are doing the right activity at the right time and at the right stage of somebody's process to buy something. A case in point, I first started at Full Contact, the pipeline when I walked in was something around $9 million, where $4 million of it was in the proposal sent stage. So if you're doing a methodology where you said, okay, proposal sent is a later pipeline stage, and so we're going to assign a 60% value to that, well, that would have said, we're going to close whatever it is, 2.8 million or whatever the number. So the challenge was the sales team wasn't very disciplined in when they sent proposals and when they did those activities. So that was one of the failures of the model that I've also experienced at previous places. The other piece is sales folks throughout my 20-year sales leadership career, salespeople in general really suck, quite frankly, at having opportunities in the right stage at the right time. So it makes it a challenge. If you have something that's sitting in a stage, but the opportunity has gone silent for 2, 3, 4 months, And we all know, including myself, salespeople hate to close, lose an opportunity. Mm-hmm. So it's sitting in your pipeline. It's for $10,000 and it's at a certain stage. Well, every time you run your forecast, you're going to count the percentage of that $10,000 towards the total forecast you think you're going to do. But the reality is that deal should have been closed lost a while back, and yet you're counting those dollars to your forecast. So for me, it was a failed process. So when I started to invest a lot of time thinking through it, what I realized is that a sales stages is important, and it should show the velocity of how people and how prospects engage with you and how they evaluate and buy things. Forecasting to me was a complete separate piece and function of the pipeline. And once I realized that piece, I was able to iterate on these definitions. And I don't like to read things verbatim off of a screen, but I do believe this is really important. To me, sales stages, it represents the process that you follow to ensure that the execution of a consistent, predictable, and successful outcome when we qualify into a sales motion. Sales stages illustrate where the prospect is at in their buying process. And I think that phrase is really critical. Mm-hmm. The forecast is that consistent methodology that we follow to ensure proper expectations are set around how much, how sure or confident, and how soon timing we will close profitable deals. This is how we tell the organization, and when I say organization, it's really important when you're managing up and you're managing to whether it's the executive team, the CEO, the board. This is how we tell them what to expect. So in my story about the CFO 10 years ago, I was unable to do that piece. I was unable to tell him how much and how soon we were going to be able to close revenue and to do that accurately. When I think about the sales stages, and I think this is really dependent on everybody's unique business, what I do want to point out here, and we use these at Full Contact, to me, the sales stages, and once again, being simple, I tried to really boil it down and simplify it, is they had to align with the buying process or how people buy things. And the example that I finally landed on had to do with, in my past experience, of buying a home. For other people, it's when they've purchased a vehicle or purchased something meaningful or a material expense in their life. And I really thought about it through, well, the first thing you do is you come up with the qualifications and figure out what you would be looking for. Then you go through an evaluation process. Once you've gone through that evaluation process, you have to validate your decision that you believe you've landed on. There's always this period of time where you're sitting on the couch at home and you have to make the decision, boy, do I really want to commit to this financial obligation? Do I really get the value? Is that the house or the car that I really want? Am I willing to commit to it? And then once you've done that, then you have to go through the closing process. You have to manage the timing and what you need for that and how it works. And do you have to deal with your bank and all those things? So to me, it became simple to be qualification, evaluation, validation, and then manage the close. And so those are our sales stages here. I do have one sales stage that does not even show up in the pipeline, which is for a business development team, and that's the pre-qualification stage. For us, the criteria has to do specifically with our business, but in essence, what is the size of the opportunity? Do they buy into or show signs that they buy into your initial value statement or value proposition? Is that interesting to them? Who does the company that you're trying to sell to compete against in their world, so you have a better understanding of their business? And most importantly, are they, the buyer, willing to invest time with you? Are they willing to commit to a qualification or a discovery meeting? If those criteria are met, then we actually do the qualification meeting or the discovery meeting. Once that discovery meeting's done, then we look at it and say, okay, the goal of an opportunity being in qualification is really to understand if we can garner conceptual buy-in at a high level of what we're trying to sell them. We have here certain stages that we believe are important, or certain activities that we do in this stage, such as sending, we call it a champion letter, but it's a summary letter of the conversation or email. Do we understand that we have the right person engaged? How do we fit into their initiatives? Do we understand their initiatives? Do we understand what their goals and they're trying to accomplish? And can you articulate as the salesperson what their potential use case could be? If you get the opportunity at this stage, another way to qualify that prospect in this stage is, if it makes sense or is logical, can you give them a really broad range of what this could potentially cost to see if that fits within what they're thinking? So that's how we view the qualification stage in the pipeline. When you get to evaluation, it's pretty self-explanatory. I know, as a student and a believer in the predictable revenue methodology, that when I've evaluated many sales methodologies over the years, the way I did it is I went and read the material. I went and listened to podcasts. I went and tried to read any blogs or understand what other sales leaders were saying about a particular methodology. And so you're actually evaluating whether this is the right fit for what you're trying to accomplish. Well, from the sales end, we try to view that stage with our prospects in the same way. This is where you would do a demo or a proof of concept. This is where you would understand, as they're evaluating you, you would want to, at the end of this stage, present pricing to them. You want to understand, you want your prospect to understand, this is what we're trying to offer. This is what our services or offerings are. This is the value, and we're going to try to prove the value of what we can do for you. And by the way, this is what it costs. This is also in the evaluation stage. You may want to get deep, depending on your product or offering, in understanding whether, from a technical perspective, this is a good fit for what they're trying to do. Then we get into that validation stage. This is what I always think about. You're sitting on a couch at home with your significant other, and you're really weighing the pros and cons of whether you want to move forward and buy something. So this is where you, as a sales rep, you really need to gain and get full commitment around that there's business buy-in, that this is the right investment for them. This is also, as a sales rep, you want to get agreed upon steps or a sequence of events of how we move forward all the way to going live or them consuming your product or services. And then this is also in the validation stage, where if there's any negotiation around pricing, you want to end this stage with an agreed upon price for your offerings or services. And then when we get into the manage the close stage, which, by the way, we couldn't think of a word that ended in Asian. We have qualification, evaluation, validation. We could not think of something for manage the close, unfortunately. But once you're in manage the close, you're finalizing the legal process. You understand when they're going to execute it, who's signing. You understand the timeline's locked in. And for us, that's the sales stage process. All that being said, that is completely separate from the forecasting methodology. The forecasting methodology, we have something in the pre-qualified stage, which doesn't even show up in our pipeline. We have something in what we call WIP, or work in process. Mm-hmm. We do not assign a dollar value in the pipeline yet to something that is a work in process. And then we do a very simple C, B, and A forecasting methodology.
And just for people that can't see, C is you're assigning 34% likelihood of close. B is probable 67%. A is you've got to commit a commitment, and that's 85%.
You got it. And those numbers, we literally change on a quarterly basis. So as an example, in C, that has moved from over the last three quarters from a 34% probability, then it went down to a 31% probability, went back up to a 33% probability. And then as we finished Q1 here, and we analyzed deals in the beginning of the quarter that were in C, it went back up to 34%.
What factors into that for you? Is it just historical, what's closed? Are you looking back at like what we forecasted and comparing to what actually happened?
Yeah, you bet. So this is all deals in the previous quarter, whether beginning of the quarter or throughout the quarter, that had a close date within the calendar quarter that were at this stage at some point in time. So anything that had a C stage or a C forecasting stage within Q1 that had a close date that at some point was in Q1, we go back and analyze all of those deals and see not what percentage of the deals we closed, but what percentage of the total revenue that those added up to did we close out of those opportunities. Mm-hmm. So we literally evaluate this as a science, and I'm fortunate to have an incredible sales operations partner who is fixated on this. And so every single quarter we update it based on the previous quarter's results.
Gotcha.
And what's interesting over time, especially the last four or five quarters, here at the, you know, being at the same company, they have varied anywhere from, call it 2 to 4%, but they're pretty darn accurate as far as if A is 85%. I think at its highest, it was at 87% evaluating a quarter. So they tend to settle in and be within a couple few percentage points. And when I give a weekly forecast to in our executive meeting, I always use the current percentages based on what we learned from the previous quarter. So you get it dialed in that way. We do have, as I mentioned, that pre-qualified stage, which also aligns to one of our sales stages, pipeline stages. But once again, this is for our business development team. We view forecasting through the lens of very specific criteria at each stage, and how many of those criteria have to be clearly identified and be able to be articulated in order for it to move to the next stage. So in pre-qualified, as an example, a BDR, a business development rep, has to be able to identify and clearly articulate three of the four criteria we have. At that stage, it's just, and this is for our business specifically, but we understand the size of their database. We have conceptual buy-in of what the value proposition that we've given them. The key one to me, no matter what company you're at and no matter what market you sell into, you have to be able to check the box on they are willing to invest the time in starting this conversation. If they're not willing to accept a meeting to be able to go deeper and really go through a qualification process, then to me, they shouldn't be represented at all in the pipeline. And we understand who they compete against. Once again, it's about learning their industry or the space they're in. And for us, we feel like that's really important. When we move something to work in process, this is where we start to expand what the criteria are. So, and once again, I want to reiterate, when something's in work in process or WIP, it's in our pipeline, but it has a $0 value. There is no dollar value that contributes to our forecast. So at this point, to be in WIP, we are engaged with them. We do have defined next steps on the calendar. So there's a next meeting scheduled. And we have done and completed a qualification or discovery call. At this point, we require the sales rep to be able to check off four of the following six. Can they clearly articulate who the decision maker is? Do we understand what their goal, need, or issue is? And is it a goal, need, or issue that we, with our products and services, can impact or help them achieve? This one's always tricky for people at first, but once you're focused on this for some cycles, it starts to make a lot of sense. We believe it's really important to understand and be able to identify what is their source of urgency. Why do they have this initiative or this goal, and how important is it to them to be able to achieve this goal? That tends to impact what we or what close date or where we forecast this opportunity to be at. We also want to get an understanding at this stage of how do they either have budget, or do they understand as the buyer how they go ask for budget? We clearly need to understand who our champion is. And at this point, we went from understanding who that company's competitors are. Now we want to get an understanding of who our competitors are in the sales engagement. So once a business development rep and then the sales rep can identify and clearly articulate four of these six criteria, now it gets exciting because it moves into a C in our forecast. And once it moves into a C, a dollar value gets associated with that opportunity. And now it is part of our forecast for the quarter.
So where is this being tracked? So if we go back to WIP for a second there, like, I definitely have some of these in my Salesforce, but I don't think there's a field that I've checked off in Salesforce that says, you know, next meeting booked. You know, I know there's ways of running a report here. So how are you, or are we skipping ahead too far? Are we going to cover this later?
No, that's a great question though. So this comes from iterations over the last three companies I've been at. We found a local firm that literally can make, in our instance, it's salesforce.com. And we've also explored other CRMs in the past and have also found these type of consultants or firms out there. But with salesforce.com, we found local firm that can literally build our opportunities and then build them the fields to where we can report against them, where we could configure our opportunities to the point where all of this can be populated within the opportunity itself.
Gotcha.
So we literally, myself and the director of sales here at Full Contact, we've worked together actually the last 10 years. So he's experienced the same pain with me as I've gone through. And so we have figured this process out together, but we found a vendor. Once we figured out this process, we said, okay, well, this sounds good, but if it's not in our CRM, how the beep are we going to track it, right? Mm-hmm. So we did some research. We happened to find a great local vendor. We explained to his firm what we were trying to do. And him and his team are wizards. They came in, configured Salesforce in exactly the way that we needed it to be able to report on this and track it. So we have the CRM really dialed in. When we came to full contact, I think it was in the second quarter we were here. We brought them in and said, yeah, just rinse and repeat and get our Salesforce instance in place. And then we were also fortunate to hire a sales operations person who, if a sales rep did not have one of the fields filled in, and many of them we make required, but if a sales rep didn't fill it in or didn't fill it in the right way, I think I've seen her cut off fingers before. So we're just very, very strict around around this piece because we feel it's that important. And thank goodness we have a sales team that once they saw a couple of fingers missing, they also believe it's important. But the
program.
So
we're going to hit you up for can I get a screenshot of what one of your opportunity records in Salesforce looks like? Just so we can share? You can
Link
it out and all that. Cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll send that along.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, you bet. So when something's in C and this is the way we view it as well. If it's going to be a dollar value that goes to our forecast, and everybody understands that our forecast goes not only to the CEO, and something that we talk about in executive meetings every week, but they also understand that it goes to our investors. And it goes to our investors on purpose because I want to always be really transparent and make sure that they're partners of ours and understand where our business is at. So everybody understands if you're going to move this to C, you have to associate a dollar value. And at this point, what we're saying is we are actively competing for that piece of business. We're no longer passively competing or figuring out if we can, but we are actively competing. So I shared the six criteria earlier when something was in a WIP. At this point, we have clearly delivered pricing. We are competing, but we don't quite understand yet whether or not this can close in quarter. And we also don't understand who is going to assign this, who's going to give the final approval. So how we get this done in the end is still unclear, but we do know we're competing and we can answer five of the six qualification criteria. And we can clearly understand that. So what we've realized over the last number of quarters here is that 34%, and once again, I mentioned earlier, it's bounced anywhere from, I think 31 was the low and maybe 35% was the high. But after Q1, it was 34% of the dollars at this stage wind up turning into revenue by the end of the quarter. When we get to B, now things get meaningful because at that point we have received, whether it verbal or in writing, we know we have gone the commitment, we are the vendor of choice, and we clearly understand the timeline in that there's a commitment, we're gonna get this done within the calendar quarter. We understand what the urgency is, why we're gonna get this done. We understand that where the money's coming from. This is very much about being the clear chosen vendor for this project or to meet this goal. What we have found, and it literally is varied within a couple of percentage points, 2/3 of the revenue that make it to this stage in quarter wind up turning into revenue in the end. And then finally, a simple CBA process. When we're in A, this is where the sales rep is saying, I am committing these dollars for this quarter. Contracts are in process, the legal process, We understand who's signing and when they're signing it. There is no more evaluation or due diligence that needs to be completed. If there's, we happen to get into some relatively large deals with some pretty big companies where there's a procurement process. Well, at this point, we understand and have completed the procurement process and or understand the timeline for its completion. And at this point, we have found 85% of the dollars that make it to this stage wind up turning into revenue within this calendar quarter. So that's how we can go into January or go into April 1 or go into July 1 and look at our pipeline and be able to predict within a very a reasonable margin of error where our revenue is coming from. And by the way, that doesn't happen with, it doesn't happen by just putting this stuff in Salesforce and assuming that all of my sales partners are going to adopt this and live and breathe and think about this all the time. And I used to believe or hope that once we had this all dialed in, that the sales professionals would just do it and understand it. What I found is there's ways you can support your sales partners in order to be accountable, not necessarily to myself and the organization, although that's part of it. But this first point that I'll cover, and I put it first because I think it's the most impactful. We do team pipeline reviews here. And what happens is each sales rep needs to defend their pipeline in front of their peers and in front of the sales leadership. And it's not a, there's not a single light hanging from a dark room that's swaying back and forth. And we're not making them sweat, but the conversation is just very clear. And the sales rep approaches it that if they're going to say they have something in B or they're going to say their pipeline is going to produce X dollars in this quarter, they know they have to defend that. They have to clearly be able to articulate questions that are asked around what they know about both each of the sales stages and what we view you need to know in the sales stages, as well as that they have to understand in the forecast stages, which we, by the way, tend to put more weight on than the sales or pipeline stages. They need to be able to commit to and defend and believe in what their forecast is telling themselves, us, and the organization that they're going to deliver in revenue for the quarter. What's been very interesting as an aside, and I probably shouldn't mention this, but I will. Literally, within the last several days, I've had a sales rep here resign and absolutely did it in the right way and respect the heck out of them. But they resigned in part because they were unable to forecast their business correctly. And frankly, their peers, their sales partners, it was clear that they were becoming very frustrated with the fact that they couldn't forecast and commit to the team and be accountable. And that was part of where it just didn't feel like the right fit and the individual landed on that. This peer team pipeline review is a uber important way to create that accountability. And then finally, we absolutely do one-on-one pipeline reviews every week. And that's where you can go deep if you're a sales leader listening to this, that's where you can go deep as a coach around this and really help your reps around their opportunities. And also, you want to reaffirm that they believe that they are forecasting their revenue correctly and that they believe they believe in their own forecast and can defend it. That continues to reinforce the accountability piece. So bottom line is what that has tended to result in my experience is you can look at your sales partners, you can look at the other leaders in the company, you can look at the CEO, and you can look at the investors and your board, and have a high degree of confidence when you tell them, this is the revenue we're going to achieve in this quarter, and then deliver on it. So that's really all I had for a show and tell. But that's, I tried to break it down in the way I think about it, which hopefully, if, and maybe I'm just too familiar with it, but I try to view it as very simple and straightforward.
Yeah, I have a lot, last couple questions, because I know we've gone a little bit over the 30 minutes that we were shooting for, but thank you for going into such detail. I find that the value in getting people like you on here is to be able to sort of open the kimono and show us exactly how you do it. And so I think, you know, going into this level of detail was warranted and super helpful this time. So thank you for all of that.
You bet.
The question I had was, are your reps, are they updating the forecast? That the sort of forecast, you know, WIP, a CBA, does that happen automatically? Have you guys ever experimented with that, or how do you see that right now?
Yeah, no, we absolutely have experimented with it. Where I can't quite get Salesforce to get me there, and that once again is just my example of the CRM we use. I happen to be extremely passionate about evaluating other technologies and evaluating other CRMs. And literally, I'll get on a demo with a sales rep from another CRM company, and they'll do the high-level overview. And I say, oh, all of that looks great. Let's talk about your pipeline versus forecast and what configurable fields do you have. And if they do have that capability to do so, to configure those two separately, then I dig into, okay, but if I have a sales rep fill out A, B, C, D, you know, these fields, will it automatically update the forecast and will it lock that in? And can it just be a algorithm on the back end or a formula that does that? And the answer, I've yet to find the ability to do that. What we do have is the criteria at each stage to have to be able to be checked off, and it's based on a drop-down menu based on the sales forecast you pick. Mm-hmm. And so the rep has to be able to go in and check boxes on the pieces that they are confident that they can check the box on. So when we sit down for a pipeline review, we pull up the opportunity. We say, okay, you have this in B. We go out and hit the drop-down. They've checked 5 out of the 6 criteria, and we say, great, tell me about how you've ID'd where the funding's coming from. Oh, that's a great question. So Sally, who I'm working with, she's already presented to the CFO. So we're able to walk through each of the criteria that they've checked a box on based on the stage they're at, and over about, I would tell you, it was a 4 to 6 month period of every week, team pipeline reviews and one-on-one pipeline reviews. Now when the reps show up, and we've had this for quite a while, the reps show up to a pipeline review and they say, all right, go ahead, drill me. Tell me what opportunities you want to dig into. Yep, I have that in A, and let me tell you exactly why. I can tell you this, I can tell you this, I can tell you this. And so it's been cool to see the evolution. But to answer your question, I wish someday somebody's going to be able to configure one of the CRMs where it is just somebody puts this in or checks this box and boom.
I'm facepalming right now because like this was the whole idea behind the CRM system that we tried building 5 years ago.
Mm.
And 5 years ago, it was like there were so many other things wrong with what we were trying to do. But yes, I hope somebody is actively building this because I'm not going to. We gave it a kick once, and I should have talked to you 5 years ago. But yes, well, I hope somebody has worked on that.
Well, I will tell you, and I probably shouldn't plug them, but I had, and they happen to be a partner or a customer of ours, a CRM company where we're a big believer here at Full Contact to partner with vendors who also partner with us. So mm-hmm. We try to work with our customers, right?
Totally.
And there is a CRM company out there that we have a deep partnership with, that I said to some of the stakeholders, if you can crack this nut, I will move over to your CRM. Like literally, I will sign the contract the next day. They are in the beginning process of it. By spring of 2018, so another year from now, I'm relatively confident, and I'm spending some time with them when they come out with version one and as they're iterating. I am relatively confident there will be a CRM company that will have that. Nice. So I'm actually excited, and I wish it was the spring of 2018.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is about time to wrap this episode. Mike, thank you for coming on the show today. This has been, I feel like I've learned so much as somebody that's been doing this for 10 years already. I can't thank you enough for sharing your methodology. We'll call it the Brower methodology.
Well, unfortunately, my partner, Matt Hammond, might take offense to that, but it's just, I view it as a simple and effective methodology that is only stemmed from like many things that wind up being effective, stemmed from a lot of pain and failure first.
Right on. All right, thanks again, Mike. This has been a great.
Colin, my friend, thank you. I appreciate it.